This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. Our guest this morning is Sherry Boschert, an award-winning medical news reporter and electric car owner and co-founder and president of the San Francisco Electric Vehicle Association. Sherry is here today to tell us about her book, Plug-in Hybrids, The Cars That Will Recharge America, published in 2006 by New Society Publishers. Welcome, Sherry.
Hello.
What led you to focus your efforts on plug-in hybrids and to write the book, Plug-in Hybrids, The Cars That Will Recharge America?
Well, I've always been an environmentalist, and when we were fortunate enough to buy a home in the 1990s, one of the first things we did was put solar panels on it. And once you're making electricity from the sun, it's natural to start thinking, well, what else can I plug in? So we thought, wouldn't it be nice to have an electric car? And we began to look around, and luckily for us, in the 1990s, in the last decade, there were thousands of electric cars in California, and we managed to lease one of those. If your listeners have seen the movie Who Killed the Electric Car, they know the whole story of the battle over how we had those cars, and then they were taken away. But that's what led me into plug-in vehicles.
Could you review the differences among gasoline-driven cars, hybrids, plug-in hybrids, and all-electric cars in terms of how they operate?
Sure. The automakers, even though they fought having to make electric cars and ultimately won that initial battle, they took part of what they had learned and they put some electrical components into gasoline cars and made them what people now know of as hybrids. So they put in a few batteries, an electric motor, but they use the gas engine to recharge those batteries. So it's like driving around in a little power plant. It does give the car better fuel efficiency. The Toyota Prius gets, 50 miles per gallon? Or it can give cars more power. And more recent hybrids, they've used those electrical components to make the cars more powerful. Now, if you take that concept and you take it to its logical conclusion, you add even more batteries and the ability to plug those batteries into a regular 110 wall socket to recharge them. That's a plug-in hybrid. When you do that, instead of getting maybe 50 miles per gallon, you can get 100 miles per gallon. The all-electric car has more batteries and no gasoline at all. And so there's no emissions. It's a lot cheaper to drive. But at some point, you do have to stop and plug it in. With a plug-in hybrid, you have that gas tank as a backup, so it gives you a bigger range. It's a kind of a compromise between the two technologies.
Why at this point are you promoting a plug-in hybrid rather than an all-electric car?
Well, I do love all-electric cars. I fell in love with the little Ford ThinkCity that we first leased, and now I drive a Toyota RAV4 EV, a compact SUV, all-electric. It is a great car. All the big car companies made wonderful electric cars on nickel metal hydride batteries, which were state-of-the-art at that time. Mine's a 2002. I can go about 125 miles before I have to stop and plug it in. That's a great regional car. I can go, for instance, from San Francisco, where I live, down to Santa Cruz, which is 100 miles, park and charge for free in their public garage, and by the time I'm done doing whatever I went there to do, I can drive another 100 miles. So you can easily have a 200-mile day. You could get all over King County without really worrying about, you know, where do I plug in. But I'm not going to drive that car to St. Louis to see my mother. I'm not going to drive it from San Francisco to Seattle because every 125 miles, I'd have to stop and charge for 5 hours. With a plug-in hybrid, your initial driving could be all electric, the first 30, 40 miles, say. That's most people's daily commute. Federal statistics show the average commute is under 30 or 40 miles. That could be zero emission, all electric, but you've got that gas tank in case you do need to drive to Portland or something. That's the car most Americans are going to feel comfortable with. They're not familiar with electric drive. It's scary, the idea that you might run out of juice. Plug-in hybrid, you never worry about it. And if you forget to plug it in, no big deal. It runs just like a hybrid, which is the best car out there right now.
How do the various cars that you've just talked about vary in terms of their greenhouse gas emissions?
The more electric, the less gasoline, the better. I'm glad you asked that question because it's the one that I actually researched the most for my book, Plug-in Hybrids, because I got into this from an environmental perspective and I wanted to make sure I was doing the right thing because it's a gut reaction to think, well, gee, if we're going to plug in, you're just shifting the pollution from the tailpipe to the smokestack, right? That's partly true. But gasoline is so much dirtier. I collected every study I could find, and I put them all up on my website, sherrybosher.com, if anyone wants to look at them. Don't just take my word for it. But they all say that driving on electricity is cleaner, and this is even on the U.S. grid. I know here in Washington, you have a much cleaner source of electricity, but even on the U.S. grid, which is 52% dirty, nasty coal, it is cleaner to drive on electricity than to drive on gasoline. And we're just going to get the grid cleaner and cleaner. We're going to add more wind and solar and clean sources. So,
if all cars were plug-in hybrids, would there be enough power available from the grid to power the cars?
Yeah. In California, that's a big question, too, because, you know, we've had rolling blackouts in the past decade, and people think, gee, if we all start plugging in, aren't we going to overload the system? And actually, no. The U.S. Department of Energy, which is hardly a radical organization, they released a report in January showing that with the existing off-peak capacity, and what that means is mostly at night, and which is when people plug in their cars, especially with the plug-in hybrid, you're not going to think about plugging in during the day because you have that gas tank as a backup, and you only plug in when you get home at night while you're sleeping. There's so much power out there at night already because everyone's asleep and no one's using all the power that the power plants produce that we could already charge 84% of U.S. daily commutes by cars, trucks, and SUVs with the power that's already out there without building a single new power plant. And by the time, and that's something like 173 million cars, by the time we get that many plug-in hybrids on the road, we will have installed whatever additional power sources we need, or what I think we'll be doing is installing much more efficiency throughout our society so that our power demands don't rise.
How much could our dependence on oil be reduced by converting our automobile fleets to plug-in hybrids?
Well, the oil question is a big one. One of the themes of my book is that there's this coming together of people on the left and right ends of the political spectrum backing plug-in hybrids, and for different reasons. You have the lefty greenies like myself who want it for the environmental reasons, and then you have the likes of former CIA Director Jim Woolsey, a neoconservative national security hawk, who is saying we need plug-in hybrids to get us off of oil. 72% of the oil that we import to our country goes into our gas tanks. If we can get off of oil in our cars, we can get off of oil that we get from other countries. The countries that control the oil don't necessarily like us. So, you know, our transportation system is 98% dependent on petroleum. The biggest thing we can do to get off of foreign oil or any oil is to get our vehicles off of gasoline.
How would plug-in hybrids affect the potential usefulness of biofuels?
Well, people often ask me, you know, what about biodiesel? What about E85 ethanol? You know, which is better, and shouldn't we do that instead of plug-in hybrids? I think we're going to need lots of options. We have 10 years, the scientists tell us, to do something dramatic to start reducing our greenhouse gas footprint on this planet. So we have to throw everything and the kitchen sink at the status quo and start to change our behaviors. That said, with plug-in hybrids, any of those liquid fuel technologies are more feasible. So, for instance, the ethanol advocates, we can never grow enough corn or enough sugarcane or produce enough cellulosic ethanol to run all of our vehicles exclusively on that. It's not going to happen. But if that is the backup to the electric drive in a plug-in hybrid, you exponentially shrink the amount of liquid fuel that you need for that. So whether it's biodiesel, whether it's ethanol, plug-in hybrids make it a more realistic scenario.
How do plug-in hybrids compare in terms of economic benefits to the owner as well as convenience of use?
Well, the convenience of use is a no-brainer, and I didn't realize how much I disliked going to gasoline stations until I stopped going. I mean, in my all-electric car, I haven't really been to a gas station in 5 years. Think about it. Here's what it takes to plug in a car. I drive into my garage, I get out of the car, I plug it in, and I go about my day or my evening. Here's what it takes to refuel your gasoline car. You have to drive away from home, you have to find a gas station. Often you're in line and you pull up to the pump and you breathe the fumes and you wait while it's filling and you pay a lot more money than you pay for electricity. And then maybe you wash your hands and then you get back in your car and you drive away. Someone actually calculated, a local resident here in Seattle did some numbers crunching on the time that you save from driving electric and not driving on gasoline. And with the average car, you would save more than a couple of months of your life. What's that worth to you? I think it's worth a lot.
Could you say more about the economic comparisons?
Yes, of course. Thank you. Driving on electricity is a lot cheaper than driving on gasoline. The way I like to explain it is, with the average cost of electricity in the U.S., to drive a mile on electricity costs maybe 2 cents. If gasoline is $2.50 a gallon, to drive that same mile costs 13 cents. So even on the averages, you're saving a lot of money. Felix Kramer, who's the founder of the California Cars Initiative, CalCars.org, he converted his Prius, with the help of a Southern California company, to a plug-in Prius with lithium-ion batteries, has about a 30-mile all-electric range. And when he did that, he compared his experience before the conversion and after. And in a typical day of driving, which was about 51 miles, mostly on the highway, he got 124 miles per gallon. So you can see how the fueling costs are much less. The beauty of it is, if you get on what's called time-of-use metering, which I'm not sure if you have here in Washington, we have in California, anyone who has a plug-in car or has solar panels on their home gets on time-of-use metering. The utility then charges more for electricity during the peak hours of the day when everyone wants that electricity, but they charge you a lot less at night when no one's, and there's lots of excess electricity. So for instance, with my solar panels and my car, during the sunny part of the day, which is the peak, I'm selling electricity to the utility because I'm feeding that electricity into the grid. I'm selling it for 35 cents a kilowatt hour. At night when I plug in my car, I'm buying electricity for 4 cents a kilowatt hour. So there's this synergy between plug-in cars and solar. But even without the solar, you can get on that time of use. And this will be spreading across country. If you don't have it yet, you will get it. And plugging in at night is going to be cheaper still.
I'm Diane Horn, and we are speaking with Sherry Boschert, co-founder and president of the San Francisco Electric Vehicle Association and author of the book, Plug-in Hybrids, The Cars That Will Recharge America. Could you give just a really brief history of the efforts to make electric cars generally available?
Sure. And again, I urge your listeners to see Who Killed the Electric Car. It's a wonderful documentary, and they frame it kind of as a murder mystery with six suspects, and I'll lead you to decide at the end of the movie who you think really killed the electric car. But it all started with General Motors in 1990 at the Los Angeles Auto Show. They showed the EV1 all-electric car, although initially they had named it the Impact. Bad name for a car. They quickly changed it to the EV1. And California regulators, the California Air Resources Board, who were desperately looking for a way to clear up the smog, they said, oh, you can make a zero-emission vehicle? Well, now you have to make a zero-emission vehicle, not just you, but all the other major car companies. And thus began a 13-year battle where the regulators were saying, by 2008, 2% of the cars that you sell in California, if you want to do business here, have to be zero emission. And by 2001, 5%. And by 2003, 10%. And the car companies, like major corporations, don't like being told what to do. So they fought it while they produced the car. They fought it. They sued the state. Lots of battles back and forth. And in 2003, they did water down the zero emission vehicle mandate. And because they had only leased the cars, they pulled them back and crushed them. It's the first car in history, when it was discontinued, that the car companies weren't happy to take your money and say, well, here, take the last ones, but, you know, eventually there's not going to be parts or it's going to be hard to find. People were begging to buy these cars, and instead they took them back and destroyed them. That made so many of us so angry that we got active. And people had street demonstrations and lobbied politicians and had vigils, some of which you'll see in the film. And we did shame them enough that we managed to save 1,000 or so electric cars that are still on the road, mostly in California, showing how well they work years later. The batteries are as good as new, the nickel metal hydride batteries. We love these cars. And that sort of was the stopping point for the modern history of the electric car. The battles have been continuing. The California Air Resources Board this year will revise the zero-emission vehicle mandate. So we might, again, get government regulations saying you've got to produce clean cars, but we've all got to keep up the pressure.
What is the history of the plug-in hybrids?
The plug-in hybrids were happening sort of simultaneously, but because all of the focus of that battle was on completely electric cars, which are zero-emission, the plug-in hybrids just kind of got lost in the wayside at first. General Motors in the 1990s did show a plug-in hybrid version of its EV1 electric car. It was a four-seater. It could go 25 miles on electricity, and then the gasoline would come on. And when Chelsea Sexton, one of the characters in my book, one of the activists who used to work for GM, when she would show it at the auto shows, people would say, oh, it's electric, but you've also got the gas tank? That's what I want. But we never had a chance to buy that car. The Swedish car company Volvo had designed a plug-in hybrid and liked it well enough that they started building a fleet of them in Sweden for further testing. But unfortunately, in 1998, they were bought out by Ford, which told everyone in the company that they wanted them to drop the plug-in hybrids and focus on their core technology, which was the gasoline-dependent SUV. So the Volvo folks did end up taking some of that knowledge and putting it into the Ford Escape Hybrid. But, you know, we've had these cars. They're not new. Professor Andrew Frank at the University of California, Davis, he and his students have been converting cars to plug-in hybrids and building plug-in hybrids from the ground up for a decade now to show it can be done. They've done huge SUVs that can get 60 miles all electric before the gas comes on, powerful cars. And I mentioned Felix Kramer earlier with CalCars.org. In 2004, they did the first public conversion of a Prius to a plug-in Prius with just simple lead-acid bicycle batteries that gets 100 miles per gallon. So people are doing it independently in colleges and in their garages to show it can be done. And if we can do it, Tech, Toyota, and GM could do it better.
Why do you think the automobile companies are not interested in the plug-in hybrids?
Well, that's the big million-dollar question. They had to build a whole movie around that, who killed the electric car. The suspects, I mean, was it the car companies? Did they not want to do it? Did they think no one wants these cars or they're too expensive, no one will buy them? Was it the oil companies? I mean, they poured hundreds of thousands of dollars into campaigns to trash the electric cars in California. Did consumers not want them? Were the batteries not good enough? Were people bamboozled by the hydrogen hype? Did the state regulators back down? It was a little bit of all of that, really. My shorthand for it, though, is I think it's sort of capitalist inertia. If you're a major corporation, any new technology or any new direction in your industry, which is what plug-in vehicles are, takes money up front. And the typical business plan is a few years down the road, you start to make money on that. But initially, it's a cost up front. In the 1990s, the car company, the U.S. car companies anyway, were in the red and weren't willing to take that kind of risk. So you're not going to make that change unless either you're required to by the government or unless you think there's such huge demand out there that one of your competitors might beat you to it if you don't do it first. So the car companies have been sitting there not really having either one of those motivations to go there. That's starting to change.
Have there been any technical blocks to developing the plug-in hybrids? Batteries have been one of the issues talked about.
Well, the three excuses that the car companies consistently give for not selling us plug-in cars, whether it's all electric or plug-in hybrids, has been that, number one, nobody wants them. Number two, the batteries aren't good enough. And number three, they're too expensive. And I'm here to tell you, having driven for 5 years on batteries, the batteries are good enough. When you hear the car companies talk about this in public, what they're saying is the lithium-ion batteries aren't ready yet. They're all focused on lithium-ion batteries, which, granted, are so new, especially for purposes in cars, that I don't blame them for not feeling comfortable offering a 10-year, 150,000-mile warranty, which is what's required in California if you want to sell a car. Lithium-ion batteries haven't been around quite long enough to do that. Nickel-metal hydride batteries, on the other hand, like I have in my RAV4 EV, like powered most of the all-electric cars and could power plug-in hybrids, those have been ready for years. Those are ready right now. So in a way, I fear that lithium ion has become the new hydrogen. It's a way for the car companies to say, well, we're not going to give you the car you want because hydrogen's just around the corner, which is what they said. And now they're saying, well, we're not going to give you the car you want because lithium ion batteries are just around the corner. And when we're working on it, and when they're ready, we'll give it to you. I don't buy it. And they definitely are working on it, but we could have these cars today. So people just, they need to demand them. At Plug in America, which is a nonprofit group that I'm on the executive committee of, which is working to get these cars back on the road, we have the phone numbers of all the major car companies posted on the website, pluginamerica.org, and we encourage people to call them and say, I'm not going to buy another new car until it has a plug on it. No plug, no deal.
You mentioned hydrogen. How does the potential for hydrogen-powered vehicles compare to plug-in hybrids?
When I first heard about hydrogen fuel cell cars, I was excited. It sounded good. The only thing that comes out of your tailpipe is a trickle of water. Felix Kramer, the founder of CalCars.org, is another character, major character in my book. And I tell the story throughout plug-in hybrids, not just of the technology, because I'm not really a car geek. I'm really more of a people person. So I alternate the chapters between explaining the technology and telling the story through people like Chelsea Sexton, who used to work for General Motors, and like Felix Kramer, who founded CalCars, which initially was going to be dealing with hydrogen fuel cell cars. I mean, that chapter is called Felix Flirts with Hydrogen. But the more he looked into it, and I get to tell this story through him, but it allowed me to look into it, it's not that hydrogen fuel cell cars won't ever be here. They won't be here soon in any affordable means, but I'm sure they can build a decent hydrogen fuel cell car. The problem is, where do you get the hydrogen? And right now, there's only two ways to get it. And either one of those are less efficient, more expensive, and more polluting than driving a plug-in hybrid or an electric car. Number one, you can either take natural gas and reformulate it to make hydrogen, because hydrogen is the most abundant element in the universe, but it doesn't exist by itself. It's always tightly bound with something, so you have to break it apart to get the hydrogen. So you can reformulate natural gas, but why would you want to? I mean, Honda right now sells a compressed natural gas car, and if you use that natural gas directly to drive a car, you can go 60% further than you could if you use it to make hydrogen to drive a hydrogen car. And that's a fossil fuel anyway. No one's really talking about that for a sustainable future. What the hydrogen proponents pretty quickly move to is the other way to get hydrogen is to apply electricity to water, H2O. And you pull that H, the hydrogen, out of water, put it in a fuel cell, run the car. Use, say, clean solar electricity or wind power or hydroelectric to do that. Well, again, you could, but why would you want to? You need four times as much electricity to do that and run a hydrogen car as you would to use that electricity to run an electric car. I don't think as a society we can afford to buy four times as many solar panels as we really need to drive a car. So I think hydrogen has some promise as a stationary application, like heating buildings, but for cars, it doesn't make any sense.
How many plug-in hybrids are currently in operation?
Well, right now, you can't get one anywhere. They're not for sale. The major car companies aren't doing them. They're all working on them behind the scenes. There's at least six or seven companies I found that have them behind the scenes. But the only ones out there right now are the conversions. There are a couple of small companies that have been converting handfuls of cars. There's maybe two or three dozen plug-in hybrids in the world right now. And they're converting them for fleets and for air quality management boards and such to as demonstration projects to show they can be done, to start driving them, testing them, see how they work, but mostly as examples of this can be done and that people want them. There's a campaign that was started by Austin, Texas, which uses more renewable power than any city in the United States, by the way. Who knew? Austin. They have a lot of West Texas wind, and their motto is, we want to replace Middle East oil with West Texas wind. But the problem is it blows mostly at night when people are sleeping. But remember, that's when people plug in their cars. So Austin started a campaign to show that there is demand for plug-in hybrids, and they've gone around to cities and fleets all over the country to get advanced purchase orders. They now have more than 9,000 soft orders for a car that doesn't even exist yet to show that there's demand. And I'm proud to say that Seattle and Wenatchee are plug-in partners, King County, Snohomish County, Port of Chelan County are all plug-in partners. Every city, every town, every business that has a fleet should become a plug-in partner to get rid of one of those three excuses. Remember that the car companies give, nobody wants them, the batteries aren't good enough, they're too expensive. Well, the plug-in partners campaign is showing people do want them.
How far along is the commercialization? You mentioned that car companies are working on them. Where do those efforts stand at this point?
Well, it's interesting because given the trashing that General Motors took from the film Who Killed the Electric Car in the past year, because the film focuses on the EV1 and how it was destroyed, although all the car companies were destroying their cars, but General Motors got the biggest black eye from that film. Given that, it is surprising and encouraging that in January at the Detroit Auto Show, GM's big splash was unveiling the prototype plug-in hybrid Chevrolet Volt, V-O-L-T, the Chevy Volt, which seems like a really cool car. It can go 40 miles on electricity on lithium-ion batteries before the gas comes on. Ford also showed a plug-in hybrid prototype at the Washington, D.C. Auto Show in January. It's a version of the Edge, but theirs uses not gasoline as a backup, but hydrogen. It's a $2 million car. They only built one of them. But both of those cars were designed so that the backup could be flex fuel. It could be biodiesel. It could be E85 ethanol. It could be gasoline. So you can see they're working on these. Six or seven car companies now have said they're working on plug-in cars. Toyota has said it's designing a plug-in car. Mitsubishi and Subaru have announced that they will sell new all-electric cars in 2009 or 2010. The little Think City, the first one that I leased, has been revived under new ownership, and they're going to start selling an all-electric car probably in 2008. The plug-in hybrids, it comes down to the major car companies. A plug-in hybrid is a fairly complex car. It's more complicated than an all-electric car. So it's really just the major car companies who could do it. And they won't say when they're going to sell them to us. They're saying, oh, maybe 2010, maybe 2011. It's, you know, the batteries, the lithium-ion batteries aren't ready yet. Well, again, I think if we demand them, if we tell them we're not buying one of your cars until it has a plug on it, we'll get it a lot sooner. If we encourage our elected representatives to give them the incentives to get these cars out sooner, we'll see them sooner than that.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I focus on the people in my book, Plug-in Hybrids, because they're average people like you and me. We all have a role to play in how this story ends and in when we can get plug-in hybrids, in whether we can get plug-in hybrids. I mean, remember, we've seen these cars before in the 1990s, but we didn't get the chance to buy them. We have to move. We have to act now. Go to pluginamerica.org. There's plenty of things you can choose from to be an active participant. If you want a car that gets 100 miles per gallon, you need to act. At the end of my book, Plug-in Hybrids, I have a whole list of things. Pick one that speaks to you. You don't have to do them all. Contact your representatives. Get your city or company to be a plug-in partner. Tell the car companies you won't buy another car. Support legislation that is happening here in Seattle to get more demonstration plug-in hybrids on the road. Be active. Don't be passive.
Thanks so much for being here, Sherry.
Thank you.
We have just been speaking with Sherry Boshert, co-founder and president of the San Francisco Electric Vehicle Association and author of the book, Plug-in Hybrids, The Cars That Will Recharge America, published in 2006 by New Society Publishers. For more information, check on the web at www.pluginamerica.org. That's pluginamerica.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, selected sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on podcasting, and scroll down to Mind Over Matters sustainability segment. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week.